Welcome back. This is the third and final segment in the journey, Persuasion Power, the art and science of successful selling. So far, we have spoken about selling the wrong thing and how knowing what the right thing is can increase your chances of getting someone to say yes to you. The idea that the wrong thing is the physical, practical, functional, pragmatic thing. People don't buy that anymore. Money chases emotional experience. If you learn how to extract the emotional attributes and value from the thing that you have to sell, whether that be a widget or an idea or a behavior, people are much more likely to say yes to you. And the next piece we talked about was some buttons that you can push to persuade others to want to think and do what you want them to think and do. And we talked about a job and money and dignity and health and time and relationships and a very important underrated button called attention, paying attention to someone, being interested in someone, and how dramatic it is that when you show interest in someone, they'll think you to be interesting. The doors that opens are great for relationships, for companionships, and for making money selling widgets. The last section is where we get to the scientific structured part of this. While there has been scientific research evidence to support the previous segments, this now organizes it into a systematic step-by-step process. How would you like to increase your effectiveness to the tune of selling an extra $2.4 million from just learning a five-step process? How would you in your company love to take a simple process and get credit for saving the company $2 million per year? Well, that's exactly what Nathan Ebert and George Zhang did. Nathan Ebert, first of all, was the one I mentioned before working at the Valvoline company, who, when he went through this class, actually, it wasn't even going through this class. I was coaching him, and he told me about a problem that he was having with one of his accounts, and I reminded him of the content of the class and suggested that he go and use the five-step process. The situation was that he had a customer named O'Reilly's, an auto parts dealer in the south of the U.S., and O'Reilly's would not stock the Valvoline products. They stocked their own personal products, their private label products, and competitors' products. And they gave limited support to Valvoline. I taught him to go and take this process as a way of constructing his presentations. And the first time he went, after years of not getting much of any support from O'Reilly's, he came back and documented 200,000 gallons of oil that he sold to O'Reilly's, converting to $2.4 million of additional revenue. That didn't come that year, would not have come that year, didn't come the year before, and so forth. And then George Zhang, the same one whose wife thought he was doing better because of the things that he had gotten in the coaching program and whose boss promoted him after about the third or fourth session of going through it with us, he told me about a problem with damaged products and how that was affecting his engineering process. And I said, George, why does this problem exist? And he told me, and I said, but why does it continue to exist? But it's not in my department. It is something between the quality control people and the outside suppliers. Well, I said, George, come on, you're too smart for this. Take the process. Go use this and talk about the benefits in it for people. Get them to the table, lay the thing out, and use this five-step process and see what happens. He did. He came back. He told me that they worked out the quality control issues. And as a result of that, the lack of damaged products now not going through the system anymore caused the company to save $2 million per year. $2 million a year. Do you want some significant effectiveness in your communications, whether they be with personal relationships or in your professional life? Then take a systematic process that is akin to the way in which human beings think and communicate that way so that you can communicate value that others will want to take from you, to buy from you. It is a very natural way to communicate, but something happens when we grow up and we get educated. We sometimes forget that which comes naturally to children, and then we struggle much more than we would otherwise. I want to give you an example of this so that you start to think of this as something that makes sense as opposed to something contrived in a laboratory. I want you to imagine, and this is a made-up story, but I think it illustrates the point well. I want you to imagine two little boys at home playing. Two of them are at the home of one of them. Let's say Johnny and Peter. Johnny's house is the place where they're playing. And Peter's supposed to go home to his mom at the end of the day. Well, there's a huge rainstorm and lightning and thunder flashing and so forth. Now, they really want to play some more, but they have a deadline. One has to go home. Johnny looks at Peter and he says, you know, it's pretty nasty out there. The storm is making traveling very dangerous, and you're riding your bicycle, man. You're going to get wet. You could get washed over the side of the cliff. Tell you what, why don't you sleep over here tonight? In fact, it's really simple because I've got a double bunk bed. You can stay on the top or stay on the bottom. I don't care. All we need to do is to let your mom know where you are so she's okay with it. Now, this way, you're going to really be in great shape because you can start out fresh in the morning, get home dry and safe. Your mom won't have to worry about you that something's happened to you. You won't have to risk your life in the storm. So, tell you what, let's call your mom. Here's my phone. Or do you think my mom should call your mom? Which do you think is better? Think about this for a moment. What Johnny has just said to Peter is classic communication skills for persuasion. Why? Because really what Johnny wanted was to play longer all night and have some fun. But rather than saying to Peter, Peter, why don't you stay over? Your mom isn't going to get really mad. You know, my mom could always talk to her. He didn't begin there. He didn't start out with what he wanted. He started out by connecting what was going on in Peter's world to what he wanted. He appended his idea to the pain or potential pain that could come to Peter. When he said, the storm is making traveling pretty dangerous, things are rough out there, there's a lot of water, you could get hurt. What he was doing was he was actually summarizing the situation that was facing Peter or potentially facing Peter. And then as a problem that he identified, he was suggesting his idea as a solution because his idea was, given how dangerous it is out there, I have an idea. Why don't you stay here? It may make sense, but it may be complicated. It may cause him to get in trouble. So he said, this is really going to be simple. There's a space for you on my bed. All we have to do is make your mom know. And now we're going to have a lot of fun. So he told him how easy it was. Then he started telling him about all the benefits. We're going to have a lot of fun. You can start out in the morning. We'll play all night if we need to. You won't have any problem. Your mom won't have to worry about you. Tomorrow morning, you can go home without all kinds of troubles. And he laid it on the benefits. And then he closed. You remember how he closed? He said, tell you what. Here's my phone. Call your mom. Or do you think it's better for my mom to call your mom? He gave him a double-ended close that said yes or yes. Yes, I'll call her. Because she doesn't like when I force adults to do my job for me. Or no, I think your mom should call her because they will respect each other more and they can talk about the safety of their children. If you are selling, you have to get through these steps in one way or another and in the right sequence in order for your presentation to have a compelling effect, likely to persuade people. I tell you, children have a way of persuading their parents. Wouldn't you agree? Do you remember when you could wrap your daddy around your fingertips or your mommy around your fingertips? You knew the right buttons to push. You knew how to get her to do what you want or him to do what you want. And yet, when we grow up to be adults and we get into a sales world or we are in some very important negotiating communication, we tend to forget the thing that made us so good when we were young. They educated it out of us. I want to take you back to the natural conversations that cause human beings to consider each other's position and move toward it. Here's what's going on. If you want me to buy something from you, I don't want to just buy it because you sell it. I want to know if it has anything to do with my needs, my situation. Is it relevant? When you establish relevance, you've done a major job there because now I'm willing to give you the ability to tell me what your idea is. So what you do is you start out by summarizing and reviewing and summarizing the situation. That's the first step that Johnny took. And it is the first step in the 5-step best practices selling presentation model of the best I've seen in big companies from Argentina to Budapest to Caracas, Venezuela, to wherever you want to go. I have been there in many, many places, and all the large companies have some version of this presentation. Then I get to some intermediate and many small companies where they don't have a process. People go and present based upon their vernacular, their skills, their ability to manipulate language, and there's no consistent platform from which all of their people sell, as they do at General Mills, Clorox, and all the other companies that do well, making billions of dollars. Here are the steps. Situation review. Does it fit my situation? Once I know it fits the situation, I don't know if I'll say yes yet, but at least I want to hear what you have to say, because it comes in the context of relieving the pain. And then once I hear what you have to say, it may make sense, but I want to know if it works or if it's going to be too hard for me to do. It may be a good solution, but too costly, too complicated. So what you do is you explain how it works to make it seem feasible that it must be. And when it seems feasible, then I am willing to consider it. Now, just in case I need some help, you go to the end part near the end and you start to reinforce the key outcomes and benefits that would be good for me. I call it what's in it for you. In your handouts, there is a chart. There are a couple charts that lay out the process. It talks about key benefits here or what's in it for me. And then finally, the close, where I like that close to be two parts where you get yes or yes. Now, let's talk about Johnny and again and map this over. Does it fit my situation? Is it relevant? Johnny said, it's raining outside like crazy. It's dangerous. Absolutely. Because in a moment, if Peter should leave, he'd get wet. In a moment, he'd be subject to the wind and the possibility of being blown off the road. Yeah? So it was very relevant. And so now with the relevance, Peter wants to know, so what are you going to do about it? Well, I think what we can do about it is we can stay over tonight. Ah, now there's an idea. That gets rid of my problem, but it could create another problem. Will it work? First of all, would your mom want me over here? Do we have space? And what would my mom say? Look, it's very simple. There's room. All we have to do is make sure we tell your mom what's going on. That's how it works. It's that simple. And then, oh, by the way, when we do that, here's what's going to happen. And then now he's reinforcing what's in it for me. What I mean by me, I mean Johnny. Not Johnny. I mean what's in it for Peter. So he says, you're going to be safe. You can go home tomorrow dry and safe without having to be blown off the road. You don't have to have your mom worry that you're on the road and something bad happens to you. And we're going to have a lot of fun tonight playing until we just drop into bed. Yeah? And now that he gets Peter into this heightened state of pleasure thinking about avoiding the pain and having all the night to play, he says, tell you what, here's my phone. Take action. Or by the way, do you think it's better for your mom to call her? It is either yes or yes. No is not a part of the formula. What am I saying? When you ask someone to make a decision and you end up with a yes or no question, does this make sense to you? Do you want to do it? In general, you have a 50-50 shot at getting a no. But if you should give the person a big purchase and a small or moderate purchase, which one do you think is better for you? Do you want to buy a whole truckload this week? Or you want to buy a half truckload and possibly come back later on? It's not as if the person couldn't say no. It's that you put that person in the mindset of choosing between two things, the one that is more appropriate and convenient and workable, where there's always the option to say no, but the no is not established in the mind consciously as when you say, does this make sense or not? Let me give you then what it takes to construct your presentation in a way where human beings will hear it and feel like it makes sense. Review the situation. How do you do that? And now I want you to refer to the handout that you got because it has the explanation. When you review the situation, you need to do some research to find out what the relevant issues and challenges are. What are the pains and risks and threats and problems facing the person to whom you're presenting? What are the opportunities and advantages that you can leverage? You do your research, you ask, you go about the business of seeing how the person operates and figure out what hurts. It could be positive, it could be negative, you just need to know. And then you need to figure out how, of the things that you find that are wrong, figure out the ones that your idea or your product or your offering can help to alleviate. When you do, then you propose the problem gently and sensitively. You talk about the problem the person has, get the person to input and say, yeah, that's true. It's really terrible. Then you can say, you know what? I have a great idea. I think you're really going to love this based on what you've just told me about your problem. And so now you set yourself up for the second in the series, which is state your idea simply and clearly. Here's what I suggest you do. I think you ought to build a product display in the main aisle that stops people as they walk around the store and gets them to do impulse purchases because they will spend more money in your store that way. Then the person may go, okay, based upon the fact that shoppers are not spending as much as they used to, and it's a big problem because they're going to my competitors, I like the idea of impulse purchase, but yeah, will it work? Do I have enough space in the aisle? Are the products the kind of products that will make people want to buy something that's not on their list? Now you have to explain how it works. So you state your idea, which is number two, simply and clearly. Then you describe how the operational details work. This is so simple. I will do the work for you. My company will ship the display unit. I'll come in on Monday morning. I will work with your aisle person to make sure the right price is on it. I will come back two times over the next 2 weeks to make sure that I rearrange the products and help your person to keep it looking great. If anything should go wrong, I'll pick it up myself so you have no risks there. Show that it addresses the problems. Show that the product will actually do what it's promised to do, or your idea will fulfill the promises the idea is supposed to fulfill. So the person can relax and go, okay, so it's a good idea. I can see it working. That's the third step. Then you get to the second to last step now, which is, okay, so yeah, we could go through all of this, but what's in it for me? How do I benefit? Now, make no mistake about this. It is really, how do I benefit? Some people make the mistake of presenting to a purchaser or buyer an idea that's good for the company. And the buyer will sometimes buy it because it's his job. But if you really want to be compelling, figure out a way to show that buyer how it makes his life better. Easier for the convenience and the lack of handling. Greater recognition because the sales will put him at the top of the competition in his company. Cause him to get recognized by his boss for doing something that hasn't been done before and do it well, and you'll be there to help him. There needs to be a what's in it for me, individual decision maker, or if it's a committee, for the people on the committee. You never sell to a company. That's a farce. That's a myth. There's no such thing as a company, except in a legal sense. You are dealing with human beings, and when you can show them that your ideas and propositions and products and widgets and services are beneficial to them personally, in addition perhaps to a company, now you have their interest in supporting you. It's at this point where you go now and you reiterate all the benefits and how it's going to make the person feel, the money that it's going to generate perhaps, but what that money will mean for the person in terms of freedom and recognition. You need qualitative and quantitative benefits and make sure that they are relevant to how that person is rewarded, or make sure the benefits are things that are important to that person. So, for example, if you're making a suggestion to somebody who is a quote-unquote neat freak, very detailed, very meticulous, some of your benefits, if they are relevant, need to talk about that. You know the best part about this? After we do this, there will be no mess. It'll be so neat. Everything will be in its place. It'll be exactly organized the way I know you like things. And the person goes, yeah, yeah, because I can't stand a mess. So your benefits need to be relevant in order for them to elicit the emotion, the feeling, the experience that you know causes the trigger of the gun to go off that says yes to you. And then finally, of course, the next steps, I like to call them next steps rather than closing. The next steps will be easy and simple. Tell the buyer, tell the person directly what you want. Do not couch it. Do not leave it to implications. Some people in selling think that if they build a good case story down to the point of the sale, they can just leave a space for the buyer to decide because the buyer is intelligent and knows what you want. Sometimes the buyer's not even paying attention. You need to tell the buyer what you want. I say, here's what I think you should do. Buy one this week and come back next week and buy the bigger size. But make sure it is very plainly stated. And as you stated, you're still using benefit language. All these steps are integrated, but you take them one at a time, master them, and then you roll them together as seamlessly and easily as Johnny had his conversation with Peter. That's the process. I just taught you 5 steps, which I would encourage you to practice. However, when you walk in to sell an idea, a thing, a widget, or a service, be aware, again, that half a yes is yes. So if you should get to the place where you are in the very first step of talking about the problems and reviewing the situation and have the buyer going, yeah, I really need a solution, and you go, what is it you're selling? And he said you have an end display. He says, listen, I am ready for that. Do not go on to step 3, 4, or 5. Stop and take the order. Because a half yes is a yes. If you have the buyer nodding with you and going, yeah, yeah, that makes sense, skip over those very simply just to touch bases and confirm, but get to the end very quickly before the buyer changes his mind. Because when a buyer is in an affirmative mood, the more information you pad upon that state is the more content with the risk that one of those pieces of content might be disagreeable to the buyer. That's it. We have talked about making sure you're not selling the wrong thing, because it is not things that people buy anymore. It's the emotional experiences, and the things are mere conduits to the emotional experiences they desire. Become a master at selling the right thing, and then when you do, make sure those things are appended to the pain that people feel if you want to get a booster that's going to make your sales go up. And then finally, when you come to put the presentation together, ensure the first order of business is relevancy. And I encourage you to continue pursuing mastery in this area. I wish you well, my friend. Write to me and tell me, fill in the feedback forms, and tell me how well this is going. And I look forward to hearing that you're making lots and lots of money and your relationships are improving significantly. Take care, God bless, and we'll talk soon.